You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Here in studio for a chat about some research they've been doing, which suggests that early Māori had mostly plant-based diets. We have Dr. Rebecca Kinniston in studio for a chat. And good morning to you, Rebecca. It's not your first time on the airwaves, is it?
Morena Zach. Nope, this is not my first time, but I'm really happy to be here and excited to give this interview.
It's great to have you on the program. And I want to start in. I want to start off this chat with some previous work you did in 2018, where you had to do some forensic anthropology and you worked with the New Zealand Defence Force to identify and repatriate New Zealand soldiers who had died overseas between 1955 and 1971. You went to six different countries, and this is a bit of a morbid question, but was it trickier to identify them given that, you know, soldiers in their line of work typically die some pretty grisly deaths? Was it harder to identify them than some of your other more historical anthropological digs?
Yeah, so that was an amazing project that I was part of, Project Te Oraki, and that was run by the New Zealand Defence Force. And the aim of that project and the kaupapa was to bring back servicemen who had died and were buried overseas between 1955 and 1971. And that involved a large team, including myself and a number of other forensic anthropologists and archaeologists. And our role was to exhume the servicemen and assist with the identifications, which we did a secondary identification. So that's age, sex, to see if the trauma patterns match the cause of death. And then also to assist the forensic odontologists, which are dentists specialized in teeth, like matching teeth in forensic situations. So that's to match the teeth with the dental records from the Army. So we assisted them. Even though it was a really difficult project, in the wider sense, our role was pretty straightforward. And it was amazing to work with the Defence Force because of how organized they are and how thoughtful they were with the entire kaupapa. So we had a chaplain and a kaupapa and a kaumātua and kuia that came with the whole team and to assist these servicemen back home for their repatriation to their families.
I'm assuming 1955 to 1971, that would have been Korean War, Vietnam War?
Yeah, Malay conflict.
Malay conflict.
Yeah, and then also servicemen that may have died for other reasons, just accidents, and they weren't brought back. It wasn't really equal how these servicemen were brought back, and sometimes the Defence Force at that time asked the families to pay for the repatriation, and they weren't able to. And so these soldiers that were left, it was to bring them back to give their family closure and allow them to have them back in Aotearoa.
Yeah, and that's real beautiful.
Yeah,
that's
it was amazing, kaupapa.
Very sweet. Given that you do a lot of Māori bioarchaeology, you must have had to learn a lot of tikanga around their ancestors' bodies and build trust and relationships with iwi and hapu nationwide, wherever you're working. How have you done that?
So the relationship building is really the most important part, and that's just through consultation and really direct and honest conversations about what we can do as bioarchaeologists and how we can assist the hapu. So we only recover kauiwi tangata, or human remains, when mana whenua requests that. I've assisted with recoveries from all over Aotearoa through DOC and Heritage New Zealand, and they recommend me to the mana whenua. And when mana whenua requests that, I discuss with them how they would like to proceed with the recovery. And so they lead the tikanga, and I say, I'm the ringa-ringa. I'm just the hands that exhume the body and then follow their lead with what they want to do,
tikanga-wise. So do you yourself have to learn a lot of tikanga?
I just follow their lead. So I just know what's happened in recoveries I've been on, but also all hapu and runaka are different. So they're going to have their own way that they want to undertake these recoveries. Sometimes it's really hands-off, or I'll just be there to remove the kauiwi and then immediate reburial. And sometimes there's more involved analysis. I prefer to do that on site in like a field lab, and then the kauiwi go for reburial where mana whenua would like them to be. be buried.
Mm. This new research you've published examines the koiwi tangata of some Waikato hapu and iwi and suggests that some Māori prior to colonisation ate mostly plant-based diets. The seven core iwi that you've analysed date between 1700 to 1780. When and how did horticulture become a real crucial part of the Māori diet, in particular regard to, I guess, this Waikato area that you've been analysing?
Well, in the Waikato area, it looks like from about 1500 AD, there's a large increase in the intensification of horticulture, and that's mostly kumara and also taro and sometimes ufi, which is a yam that people don't eat that much so often today, I should say. And horticulture, these domesticated plants that were used for horticulture, they were brought over by the initial settlers from tropical East Polynesia. And so Māori had the domesticates, or kumara and taro, from very early, from 1250, 1300 AD. But we see in ancient middens, which are trash piles that archaeologists love to excavate, that in these really early sites, there's a really broad spectrum of kaimoana, but also land-based animals. And over time, that diversity decreases, and that corresponds with an increase in horticulture in a lot of places, especially the North Island and the top of the South Island.
True. Yeah. Not so much in the rest of the South Island because it's too cold?
Yeah, they think that it's been proposed that it's not possible to grow kumara south of the Banks Peninsula. And experimentally, if you try, it doesn't work that well. There has been a new paper come out that has proposes kumara, evidence for kumara in Porokanui, but in that it's not known if that is from people bringing the kumara there or if it was grown in a microclimate.
And it wouldn't be the same large-scale operation like you see up north.
Definitely not. The scale of horticulture in the Waikato is kind of not seen anywhere else in New Zealand. Just the amount of pits to store kumara, garden soil. So these are amended soils that you can see when you dig down. So they're amended with charcoal and also gravel. And this gravel is harvested from borrow pits, what's known as a borrow pit, where people are taking the gravel, amending the soil. And this creates a really free-draining but warm soil for kumara to grow in. And they would make little mounds called puke. And in each mound, there was kumara grown. And this allowed for the kumara growing season to be extended. And also to grow the really nice big kumara, because you need that kumara perfectly grown so you can harvest it and keep it in a storage pit, and it has to be harvested so there's no blemishes on it as well. So it's a super advanced horticultural methods, but also storage methods, because kumara is seasonal and you need to store that kumara over the winter for that sustained food resource.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This is an aside, but you mentioned middens before. My dad is a earthworks contractor, and he has tons of stories about cracking into some random bit of ground, and then they'll just find a deposit of heaps of shells, and that's a midden.
Yeah, it is a midden.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Typical midden, especially when it's associated with fire-cracked rock, which is used for cooking, and also charcoal, and that's how you know it's archaeological.
So fascinating. So fascinating. The vegetables making a bulk of this plant-based diet, as we mentioned, are kumara and taro. What effect is having a mostly bitrophic diet, so a diet with two things in it, have on the bodies of the people that you've looked at?
The diet of eating a lot of kumara and taro is actually pretty healthy.
True.
Yeah, so you've got kumara and taro have lots of nutrients in them. They're high in fiber, vitamin C, vitamin A, manganese. And across the Pacific, people are eating a really large proportion of starchy root vegetables. Like, this is a tropical East Polynesian diet. But when people first came to New Zealand, they're not practicing so much horticulture because, one, it takes a long time to get established, and two, there's other things to eat. They were definitely supplementing their diet with plant foods.
Yeah.
But then over time, when people really learned how to amend the soils and to do this large-scale horticulture, they're eating so much of it, and it's healthy. The study doesn't say that people aren't eating protein at all. It's just in such tiny amounts, it's not showing up.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it doesn't have any negative effects on the teeth of the people that you've looked at.
Well, Interestingly, it's actually almost healthier than eating a diet of a lot of marine foods and fern root. Fern root is bracken fern, and this was a staple food across Aotearoa for early Māori, and this is was a root that was dug up, roasted, or pounded, and people ground it through their teeth to extract the starch, and that caused a lot of tooth wear to a certain point where a tooth could rotate in the mouth and also be worn but stay in the mouth. It's an amazing physiological process. But we don't see any of that. That's called the fern root plane when you see that wear pattern on the teeth. And we don't see any of that in the Waikato Māori. So the softer diet, though it might cause a few more cavities, it's actually like pretty good for your teeth compared to other things.
Sure.
I guess when I'm thinking of monotrophic sort of mostly vegetable-based diets, I'm thinking of some of the earliest examples of agriculture in the Levant where, you know, they're growing wheat and eating wheat and wheat products doesn't do a lot of great stuff for your teeth or your body.
Yeah. There's a theory that there's a decline in health with an increase in agriculture. It's a bit different in the Pacific because these starchy root vegetables, they're more nutritious, first of all. Mm. And it's a different crop entirely.
Totally. Yeah. As we've mentioned, this study looks at a specific group or groups in the Waikato. How many other Māori populations would have had similar diets prior to contact with Europeans, would you say? Is there any estimation we can make?
It's really hard to know. So this is this type of study is really new, and this is because of the history of bad practices, basically people stealing kauiwi tangata and transporting them overseas. And now there's a whole division at Te Papa that is bringing those kauiwi back. So there hasn't been any research directly on kauiwi tangata for a long time until probably early 2000s is when it really started developing, when people are working directly with Mana Whenua to get this research underway. So this particular study was a collaboration between Ngāti Mahanga, Ngāti Wairere, Ngāti Korakai Kahukura, and Ngāti Hoa, and they were Mana Whenua to the Tamahere region where these kauiwi were accidentally discovered during the roadworks or earthworks.
Waikato Expressway, right?
The Waikato Expressway, yeah. So because people didn't know that there was any burials there or there was a wahi tapu, they were really interested in understanding everything they could about these tupuna. And that included more traditional analyses, so age, sex, disease, and also isotopic analyses, which are my specialty.
Super, super, super cool. You mentioned isotopes. Does that mean that you're working with a lot of radioactive elements there?
No, these are stable isotopes.
Okay, they're stable isotopes. Yeah, oh, good. You're not going to be worrying about radiation poisoning.
No,
down the line.
These are just stable isotopes of carbon and nitrogen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so pretty benign.
That's good.
Yeah.
Not only did this study show that these iwi hapu had mostly plant-based diets, but it also provided a glimpse into Māori burial practices prior to the influence of Christianity. The tupuna were interred as a secondary burial in a borrow pit. What is the significance of your findings with regards to the burial aspect of things?
So this was a really interesting part of the discovery. So a borrow pit, as I said earlier, this is a big pit that people were harvesting gravel from, and they were using that gravel for horticultural purposes, but it created a big pit in the ground. And a secondary burial is a burial where someone has decomposed or been buried somewhere else, and then their bones are collected. And what we found was a secondary commingled burial, and this means that there's a number of individuals that were secondary burials, and they're mixed together in that borrow pit. Mm. And this type of secondary commingled burial is not rare. It is found in other places, but it hasn't been found in a borrow pit before. But people are adapting to their local areas. And it might seem kind of against what we know about Noah and Tapu today having a horticultural area with burials. But it looks like these burials might have postdated the use of the area for horticulture, or it may be that people were placed there to render the place tapu. And we do know that the two children were likely local to that area as well.
I did read that there were two children that you were analysing, and I read somewhere in the press release about how this study looked at their childhood life. What can we talk about, or what can we see about their childhood life from what you've looked at?
So by analyzing the teeth, especially the first molar, that first molar, permanent first molar, forms between birth and 9 years of old. 9 years of age.
9 years of old.
9 years of old. 9 years of age. And if you incrementally analyze the isotope, or the collagen, the isotopes in the dentine, the collagen of the tooth, down the tooth root, that actually shows you a change, or that shows you diet over time. And in because nitrogen isotopes are a reflection of trophic value, and when a child breastfeeds, it's one trophic level higher than its mother because they're actually one step higher on the food chain because they're actually eating their mother's tissues. Mm. So you can see this change in trophic position, change in food level as the child is weaned by looking at these changes in isotope values across the age differences in the tooth. And what we found was that these children were likely weaned between 2 and 3 years of age, which is what the WHO recommends for breastfeeding today. So, you know, people are practicing, healthy breastfeeding time periods, which is amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. I did have one last question, and unfortunately it has escaped my mind. This is a classic. But the one last question I do have that I prepared is to do with, you know, death. Obviously, a big portion of your career has been spent analyzing and investigating the deceased from more contemporary times, as we mentioned at the start of this chat, to hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Has that made you more at peace with death?
Yeah,
very heavy question.
I saw that question.
Didn't want to talk about
it. Yeah, no, it's fine. No, death is just a part of life, and I think working with the dead is actually very peaceful. Like, it's obviously the highlight of this job, because I wouldn't be doing it for almost 20 years if it wasn't enjoyable. But I do find it really peaceful working to exhume people that have passed, and especially in Aotearoa, I'm working a lot with iwi and hapu, and it's a really, you know, spiritual and deep process to undertake this. And in really peaceful places as well. I've been working a lot in Northland and assisting with Kauai recoveries from the previous cyclone, from Cyclone Gabriel.
Oh, wow.
So that's why the new cyclone was a bit scary, because these major storm events, they
dig up a lot of stuff.
Well, they cause so much coastal erosion because of the storm surges. And what we're finding is that there's actually a lot of Kauai buried in sand dunes that people didn't know about at all.
Oh.
And so these sand dunes are so vulnerable for coastal erosion. And the impact on archaeology, and also the unearthing of Tupuna, is just going to accelerate the more and more we see these storm events.
Yeah. But you yourself, whenever you do an investigation or an exhuming, you're not thinking, that's me. That's me in 40 years.
I think everyone thinks that. Maybe that's a good part of that, because you realize that your time is limited and
make the most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program today. I really appreciate it. Do you have any final thoughts, words, or opinions to leave our lovely listeners with?
Oh, I guess just, enjoy the day Have a good sunny afternoon in Dunedin while it lasts.
Carpe diem.
carpe diem.
Alrighty, thank you so much, Rebecca.
Kia ora.
That was Dr. Rebecca Kinnison talking about new research that she's been involved with, suggesting that early Māori might have had plant-based diets. Alright, we're going to play this track from...
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.